Welcome to the first ever episode of The Depot Dive, a weekly podcast where we're going to deep dive into some of the biggest Steelers-related topics of the week. You've probably seen our articles on SteelersDepot.com or even heard our voices on the daily Terrible Take segment, but now you get to put a face to those voices. I'm your host, Ross McCorkle, and above me here on the screen is Joe Clark. Before I let Joe introduce himself, I want to give a quick plug to the phone number there at the bottom of the screen. You can call that number and leave a voicemail with a chance for us to answer your question on next week's episode. Obviously, with this week being the first episode, we will not have any to answer, but we do hope you call in. Joe, how are you doing today? Has this nasty weather reached you all the way up there in Boston?
Yeah, today's one of the worst days we've had in a while. We got some rain, a little bit of sleet, just generally gross weather that you don't like getting in early April when it's supposed to be, you know, nice and sunny and spring weather, but it is what it is. But excited to be here, excited to do this, kind of expand a little bit of, you know, what we've been working on over the last however many months at Depot. So very excited to get started today.
Yeah, likewise. I'm down here in Nashville, and around this time of the year, pretty much every year, without failure, we get some tornadoes. And so yesterday, the forecast was very heavy on panic and fear, and it didn't end up being that bad. Just some rain and wind and a little bit of hail, but we lucked out there. All right, so the first topic, as you can see there on the screen, that we're going to dive into, we're going to be talking about some of the pre-draft visits and the pro day circuit that has pretty much just concluded yesterday. The last pro day, which was Yale. There's a couple individual workouts that are scheduled for some players who maybe were injured earlier in the process, like Iowa's Cooper DeJean and people like that. But pretty much the bulk of the pro day stuff is now done. So starting with, we're gonna talk about the Big 12 pro day that occurred the other day. The biggest name of interest there was West Virginia center Zach Frazier. He obviously had that broken leg last year and wasn't able to participate in much of this pre-draft process. And there was Isaac Williams was on site there to scout him. So that's somewhat notable. Anytime a position coach is out scouting some of these players, it piques your interest a little bit. So what do you think about Zach Frazier? I mean, the buzz around him has kind of been, is he going to be a first rounder? Is he going to be there when the Steelers select in the second round? Have you had a chance to watch much of Zach?
Yeah, so one thing I want to say is that I know those numbers, the Big 12 Pro Day weren't great, but this is a guy who literally broke his leg in November, and he's coming out here just a couple months later and, you know, being able to pretty much work out in full, showing that he'll be ready to go during training camp. As far as him being a first rounder, I think, you know, kind of the general buzz around centers, you know, we've heard about Jackson Powers Johnson potentially falling, Graham Barton rising. I still think that Frazier's probably the number three center. So if Powers Johnson's falling, then Frazier, I think he's probably, you know, pretty stable in the second. But as to will he be there for the Steelers in the second, I think that's a very legitimate question because, I mean, I know the numbers weren't good at the pro day, but he's still one of the top centers in a class where there's, you know, a few center needy teams. So I don't think there's the Steelers, you know, should be content expecting to sit there in the second and have him be there. I think, you know, he's a very solid player. He's stout. He's the type of guy that, you know, should be on the Steelers radar and likely will be, but he could go ahead of, you know, number 52 in the second round. And given the Steelers need at center, I don't know if they can, you know, necessarily feel comfortable waiting. Maybe he's a trade-up candidate for them in the second. It's going to be interesting to see how they approach center in this draft, because right now I don't really know how you can go into the season trusting Nate Herbig with his, what, 53 career snaps of the position. It'll be very interesting. But Frazier's a guy, you know, Williams being there, I think, is a clear indicator of his interest. We saw in the video that the West Virginia football account tweeted out, he was talking to Frazier a little bit. And, I mean, we know Frazier, we talked to him in the combine. He didn't meet with the Steelers there. But as, you know, we've hit on before, that this year the formal meetings weren't as big of an indicator as they have been in the past. So he's definitely going to be somebody on the Steelers' radar.
Yeah, and I looked into kind of the last 10 drafts, could have maybe expanded that to more, but the last 10 drafts, most in the first round, the centers go, you know, maybe zero, maybe one, maybe two go. That's kind of been the most, I think, two a few years back that went in the first round. I think the average between the first and second round is two centers going. Obviously, this year, Graham Barton having some versatility to maybe play tackle if a team views him as a tackle. He certainly has kind of the frame to play tackle, and he has the experience out there at Duke. So if a team views him as being tackle capable, then obviously that could push him up the board and complicate things. But really, there's just the three center prospects that are kind of projected to be first, not week one capable starters, but, you know, certainly at some point in their rookie season, step in to be that starter. And that's definitely what the Steelers need. I'm kind of on the same page with you. A trade up, you know, higher into the second round seems very likely, especially if they end up going with something like a tackle or a receiver in the first round. Because, yeah, I mean, you're left with a bunch of question marks, and that's not what the Steelers need right now. Obviously, they just brought in Russell Wilson. They're kind of, I don't want to say all in, but they are definitely trying to win now. Art Rooney II put that urgency on them earlier in the offseason, right after the season, kind of saying that they're getting impatient. So they're trying to win now, and it would be a shame to have, you know, centers, one of the two positions that touches the ball every single play. You don't want a guy there who has no experience or isn't capable. And Mason Cole, I mean, is that a guy who could circle back? I mean, he's the Steelers let him go early. Omar Khan talked about letting some of those guys go early to maybe allow them to get a head start on the process, make sure that they can find a new landing spot. Here we are, 3 weeks into free agency. Mason Cole is not signed to any team. I mean, is that somebody you could see circling back?
I mean, what are their other options at this point? The free agent center markets kind of came and went and passed them by. You signed Cole, you know, 1 year veteran benefit deal. Then, I mean, I guess it's good business that you reduce his cap hit for a little bit from what it would have been next season. I'm not sure how comfortable you can be, you know, having Cole as your guy, but let's say here's one realistic scenario you can throw out is they bring back Cole. And I think I want to preface this, but I don't think they do it until after the draft. If the draft doesn't go the way they want, they get a center early. They can draft, you know, maybe a Hunter Norzad in the middle rounds, the Penn State center, and then sign Cole. Cole starts the first half of the season, maybe until they're comfortable, or maybe even the full season. But it's not an exciting option, and it's not one that I'm a huge fan of, but it's really their only option right now. Like they just missed on the center market. The first day they're in on Mitch Moore. So it's like, all right, my thought was they're going to find some sort of center one way or another, even if it's a Aaron Brewer, but they didn't. So yeah, now I think bringing Mason Cole back is a very legitimate possibility, and something that if they don't get a Jackson Powers Johnson, a Barton or a Frazier, I think they'll bring him back and at least have him compete with, even if they draft Cedric Van Pran, they'll have him come in and maybe have to start a few games, but just as somebody who, you know, knows the system, knows Pat Meyer and is familiar with the team, it's a move that I think they will be made or will be considering making.
Yeah. And that center market was pretty hot and moved pretty quickly in free agency. So
yeah, it was robust. You know,
yeah. And so someone like Mason Cole, yeah, he's maybe not as exciting, but would you want to pay a Brewer what he ended up getting paid, or, you know, especially if you're planning on drafting a center, or just get Cole back on a, like you said, maybe a veteran benefit or, you know, just barely above that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. I agree. Maybe they wait until after the draft, see how that shakes out, but last year, the offense had leadership issues. The media was talking about that pretty much every week once they got into the losing streak towards the end of the season. And I know Mitch Trubisky and a couple other players pointed to Mason Cole as one of the leaders in the room. So regardless of his play on the field, he is a good locker room guy by all accounts and has the experience. So, you know, at the very least, you aren't getting worse at the position. If you bring him back, you'll be just kind of staying the same, at least in the interim. All right. Some other pre-draft visits and pro days. Obviously today, breaking just within the last hour, Nate Wiggins, the Clemson corner, they brought in Luke McCaffrey, the Rice wide receiver, brothers of Christian McCaffrey, they brought in. And then the Oregon interior offensive lineman, what's his name? Stephen Jones. Yeah, not I don't know a ton about Jones, but the other two prospects, obviously Wiggins had that blazing fast 40 time at the combine. I believe he actually got hurt during that fast run of his, so didn't get to see a ton more of his workout beyond that, but obviously showing off that he's got crazy speed. The Steelers have been lacking that kind of speed in the secondary. Guys like Patrick Peterson, who was up there in age, couldn't quite move as fast as he once could. So Wiggins is an option to kind of add some of that speed back to the secondary. What do you think about Wiggins?
I'm a big fan. I think he is definitely in play at number 20. And like you said, I mean, it was just painful to watch last year. Patrick Peterson, he's getting up there in age. And then Levi Wallace was just so slow. Those first few weeks were tough with those two guys on the outside. And I think Wiggins, he's a guy, he adds that speed element. He's got, some decent ball skills. I've seen a little bit of his tape, and he's definitely a guy that I think if they want to go cornerback in the first round, I mean, as we know, they have three or four ways they could go in the first rounds here with, for a win now team, they have a lot of holes that they need to patch right now. But if they do go corner in the first round, I think Wiggins is probably going to be a guy that's kind of at the top of their list. They saw him at the Clemson Pro Day. They had the whole cadre of Tomlin, Khan, Arthur Smith were all there. And now obviously they're bringing him in. So he's a guy they're getting very familiar with. And they also had a form with him at the combine as well. So definitely a lot of demonstrated interest. They were at a ton of Clemson games this year too, throughout the season, sending scouts. So if cornerback's the pick in the first round, I think it's going to be probably Nate Wiggins. And he's a pick that I personally would be very happy with.
Yeah, there's just some obvious concerns with. I mean, what he's one he weighed in at 173. That's a little bit
He put
concerning.
on I think 10 pounds at his pro day. He weighed in a little bit heavier, so still a concern because a lot pretty light in the pants. But he did add weight after the combine because that was like he was like a beanpole at the combine. That was very light for an NFL cornerback.
Yeah, I mean, some of these guys obviously want to maximize their 40 time, and part of doing that's maybe cutting a little bit of weight, and so. He put the weight back on. Maybe he's not as fast, but he's still obviously not going to be losing too much off that 40 time, just adding that weight. So, yeah, I kind of struggle personally with the idea of them taking a corner in the first round, just because where it would leave you with the other positions, corner. I mean, they have Dante Jackson. Whatever you think of him, Tomlin seems to like him. They've had interest in him for a long time. He himself said that since the trade. So. I think there's more pressing needs, but certainly Wiggins is an interesting name and one that could very well be the pick.
And the thing like you said with taking the corner is there's so much depth in this class too. Like the third and fourth round, there's solid cornerbacks that they could take. There's Kyree Jackson, there's Cam Hart, there's Isaiah Johnson from Syracuse, who they met with other pro day, and all those guys are kind of that mold of those Joey Porter Jr. 6'2" plus. Long arms, pretty athletic for their size, and the avatar Corey Trace corners. And honestly, like if I'm more of a proponent, take a cornerback on the third and take a cornerback in the fifth because you need depth right now. Because behind, Jackson and Porter, you're looking at a bunch of guys who really haven't played a lot. You got Trice, you got Darius Rush. And obviously, Trice coming back from the injury, and there's some upside there, but they can't really be relied on. So with me, For me, I think add as many of those guys into that room as possible and have them compete. The whole iron sharpens iron, and then you might be able to, find a pretty solid third corner out of that. And then obviously they do need a slot corner as well. So maybe one of those two picks comes in the slot. Maybe a Mike Sanders still in the second or the third. But yeah, I'm also I'm with all the other needs they have, a cornerback in the first. If it's a pick, fine, but I wouldn't be super thrilled about it.
Yeah, agreed. One more interesting pre-draft visit that came through yesterday, among some other names, defensive lineman Mason Smith there from LSU. I think it was a couple years ago, our Alex Kozora here on the site put together a study of what the Steelers look for in drafting defensive linemen. And he kind of compiled every defensive lineman drafted by the team over the last several, years, or I think it was maybe over Colbert's whole tenure. I can't remember the specifics there, but it came down to, these guys, they like these long 6'4 plus, 290 plus guys with arm length above 32 inches, athletic types. Mason Smith, I think he had some injury issues and stuff that maybe hampered him a little bit at the end of his college career there, but He's got the 35-inch arms. He's got the, I think he's 6.051, 306 pounds. He ran a 5.0140. So he's got some of that kind of mold that the Steelers go after. I think he actually compares pretty favorably to Stephon Tuitt, which obviously they haven't had a athletic freak on the defensive line like that since Tuitt retired. So what are your thoughts on Mason Smith, and where do you think he might kind of go in the draft?
Yeah, that's the range of where he can go is something that I think is, you know, a little bit interesting, because I've seen him mocked, you know, at times in the mid to late second. We can have him mocked in the fourth round. You know, like, he's one of those guys that it's really going to depend on how the position goes in the draft early. Like, if there's a run on tackles, somebody might go and take him earlier. I think he's a solid prospect. He's a guy that, you know, he stood out in a loaded LSU defensive line. They had him, they had Mekhi Wingo, they had Jordan Jefferson, who was a West Virginia transfer. And he was, you know, he was able to still make an impact. And he, it just, I know they need D-line depth, but with all the other holes, I don't know if I can get behind D-line in the second, especially after signing Dean Lowry and bringing back Mon Adams. If they had done that, and then the depth would be horrible. But now, you know, at least they have something to fall back on. They can wait until the third or the fourth. So if Smith's there in the fourth, I think it might be a run to the podium type of pick. He fits what they look for. He's a talented player, but I don't know if you, I don't know if he's a guy that I would feel comfortable taking, you know, beyond maybe that second, third round pick that they have this year.
Yeah, I agree. It does kind of concern me for the future of this team on the defensive line. I mean, yeah, they re-signed Mon Adams and they brought in Lowry. But I believe Lowry's turning 30 this year. Ogunjobi's turning 30 this year. Cam Hayward's obviously in the last couple, you know, season or two of his career. They really just have Keanu Benton. And, you know, I don't think DeMarvin Leal or Isaiah Loudermilk are kind of going to take that next step from what we've seen so far. So it's going to become basically their top need next year in my eyes. Outside of maybe quarterback, depending on how some of that goes. Speaking of the quarterback situation, transitioning to our next topic here, some of the chatter on Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, and kind of, you know, maybe what's the Steelers' ceiling with these guys? Are they going to play both of them? I mean, is Fields going to see the field? Is he going to have a chance to compete? If he doesn't win the job, is he going to be, you know, kind of deployed in specialized packages? Where are you at on some of that?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, Mike Tomlin said Russell Wilson's in pole position to win the job. I'd be very surprised if Russell Wilson doesn't win the job unless he's a total disaster in training camp in the preseason. Even if Justin Fields performs well, I think Russ is getting the first crack at it. And at this point, I mean, he's a Super Bowl winner. He's proven more in his career. The last 2 years in Denver weren't great, but I mean, last year the raw numbers were fine. I think getting an Arthur Smith's offense, kind of letting the two of them, I mean, we heard when they first met that the two of them met for hours. I view that as a positive sign that Russ is going to, you know, buy into the offense and not kind of do his own thing or freelance, as, you know, as we've read or heard that he did a little bit last year in Denver. I know former Steeler Chad Brown, so that was a big issue with him in Sean Payton's offense. But what's their upside with them? I think they can win a playoff game, which at this point I'll take, but with just how good the AFC is and how the roster is currently constructed, we don't know how they're going to fill the hole as a receiver, how they're going to fill the hole as a center right now. So I can't really say with confidence that they're anything more than win 10, 11 games and win a playoff game. Last year, they won 10 games, they lost a playoff game. This year, I could see you win 10 games, but you actually win the playoff game. So that's really the ceiling. The specialized packages for Fields, I think, are something we might see, maybe in the red zone, something he uses legs, something he uses athleticism. I mean, he's a weapon for you to use, even if he's not, you know, an every down guy. And then, you know, you can kind of get him on the field, maybe see what you have for the future. But I think he helps you win now with just some of the just stuff he can do as just an athletic freak as a quarterback. So yeah, that'll be something very interesting. And I'm sure we'll get a hint of that in training camp as well. See if they, you know, break something out every now and then. You know, last year they ran the Connor Hayward pass in training camp, and they had a Connor Hayward pass in the game last year. So we'll get a little hint of some things they might see during camp. So maybe we'll get a taste of a specialized Justin Fields package. It would definitely be interesting to see and fun to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, look, last year, obviously the Steelers started three different quarterbacks all around the league. Backup quarterbacks were kind of the story of the 2023 season. So chances are pretty good, especially with Russell Wilson up there at 35, I believe, turning 36 this season, something like that. He takes a lot of sacks. The Steelers' offensive line has improved, but figured to have a couple new pieces along the line. He's probably going to continue taking a lot of sacks. He likes to hold on to the ball a little bit too long. So I think there's a pretty good chance that we will at least get to see Fields start a game or two, if not more. Hopefully those specialized packages do become a thing. I mean, back in Todd Haley's years with Le'Veon Bell, they deployed some of that wildcat stuff, and I think they even had Ben lining up out at wide receiver for a couple snaps. Now, Ben said that he wasn't a big fan of that situation. I don't think franchise quarterbacks enjoy having the ball taken out of their hand like that. So it'll be interesting to see how Russell kind of manages that if Fields is kind of subbed in certain situations. But I think overall, if you're summing it up, they obviously improved at the quarterback position. The two biggest issues of last season, at least in my opinion, were the quarterback play and the offensive coordinator, just kind of overall creativity and scheme. Obviously, they have completely changed both of those things. Remains to be seen if that is going to be for the better, but I think the chances are pretty good, just given what we saw last year, that it will
Can't
be
be
a little bit
worse.
better. Right. So, obviously, and the other aspect of that is the fact that last year, I believe the Steelers had maybe a bottom five, or sorry, like a one of the easiest strengths of schedule, maybe the second or third or fourth easiest strength of schedule in the league. And then this year, I believe they are on the other end of the spectrum with like the second or third hardest strength of schedule. So, not all it's important to remember, not all things remain the same. So yes, maybe they upgraded some of these things, but they're going to be having a tougher road ahead of them. And last year with that easy schedule, it was made even easier with, facing guys like Dorian Thompson-Robinson and some of these backup quarterbacks that they faced throughout the year. So yes, all that's very interesting. There was one kind of not a report, but just some speculation from Post-Gazette's Jerry Dulac the other day in one of his chats, just kind of saying that Russell Wilson and the Steelers, yes, they plan to do their kind of an extension talk after this season, but he said with Fields, it wouldn't surprise him if Fields' contract was visited prior to that. And obviously prior to that would mean before the season because the Steelers do not negotiate in season. Do you think there's a chance that Fields, maybe signs a 1 or 2 year extension? Obviously, they're not going to pick up his 5th year option. Well, I shouldn't say obviously. It seems very unlikely that number's like 25 million or something like that, and that becomes fully guaranteed if they do pick it up. If they view him as a backup, they aren't going to pick that up. But could you see them try and work something out? And if so, would Fields have any incentive to do that on his camp?
That's the thing I keep going back to. It would be great business if they could work something out, get him locked up. I mean, obviously they're not going to pick up the 25 whatever million, but when I think about it, if you think about it from Fields' perspective, you don't know if Russ is going to get hurt this year or if he's going to struggle and Fields is going to step in, and then all of a sudden you sign an extension that, a 2 year deal, whatever, or even a 1 year extension to keep him under contract beyond 2024 for the 2025 season. And then you're locked into a deal that, maybe pays you top backup money. And sure, then if he plays well, then I'm sure he'll go back to the Steelers and they can revisit it and maybe tack on more. But right now, I don't know where the incentive really comes in for him to take that extension. But then the flip side of that is if he doesn't play at all this year, then what's his market going to be? And if he's only using specialized packages or rides the bench, then you're basically the team he goes and enters the market. A team's paying him for what he did in Chicago, what will then be 2 seasons prior. So for him, it might be he might. There's really 2 ways you can think about it. It's really get your money now and secure at least, a couple million, probably 7, 8, 9 million for season. That's top dollar for a backup. Maybe it'll be a little less. Or wait, let the season play out. And if you think you're gonna play and you think you can play well, then lock in, maybe get a franchise tag. I mean, there's precedent for a team declining the 5th year and picking up the franchise tag. The Giants did with Daniel Jones. And then of course they should give him that awful extension, which It's kind of set the franchise back there, but it's going to be interesting to see what they do. I think the Steelers ha are incentivized to get it done because they want to, have Fields locked down for at least another year, even if it's just as a backup. But for him, it's going to be a debate on whether or not it'll be worth it. And I think if it happens, it'll be an awesome deal. And if it doesn't, then I'd be curious to see how this season plays out and what his future in Pittsburgh might be.
Yeah, and I just keep coming back to it's I mean, Russell Wilson could and the Steelers could have mutual interest in an extension, but that's obviously contingent on him playing well, and whatever his price tag may end up being, which from his last two, big contracts that he's negotiated, it's been pretty pricey, and he kind of views himself as that. I mean, he said recently that he wants to win, I think, three more Super Bowls or something, or two more Super Bowls in the next in his 5-year plan. So he views himself that way. Are the Steelers going to be able to come to an agreement? I don't know. I would love to for them to lock up Justin Fields. Obviously, the circumstances surrounding his trade to Pittsburgh, if they're to be believed, he wanted to come to Pittsburgh. His agent was against some of the other teams, so I don't know if that. It's kind of a signal of him being like, okay, maybe I am willing to. He obviously knew Wilson was going to be there when he did the trade, so maybe he's kind of either betting on himself or he's aware that he's just going to be kind of maybe a backup for a year or two before he kind of relaunches his career. This thing can take so many different paths. It's hard to say, but if they're not able to do an extension, then next offseason is going to be. Basically, like this last offseason, all over again. We're going to be having every single quarterback linked to the Steelers. We're going to be talking about what the contracts could be for both Wilson and Fields, and there's going to be, who knows where that's going to go. So,
God help us.
yeah. Awesome. Well, transitioning to our last topic here, just talking about a couple recent mock drafts that have come through. One that I wrote up this morning that I thought was kind of interesting. Don't know if I love it, but CBS Sports Josh Edwards had the Steelers moving back 7 spots in the first round. I don't think they've moved back in the draft since drafting Casey Hampton back in, I think it was 2001 or somewhere in that range, was their last trade back in the first round. Obviously, Omar Khan has shown that he's willing to trade. Last year, he traded up 3 spots to get Broderick Jones, and when they traded back in this mock draft, they selected Georgia wide receiver Ladd McConkey. So, what are your thoughts? I guess I'll let you open up on that.
Josh Edwards, I think he's actually a fellow Xavier grad, but I really don't like this mock draft at all. Not only McConkey, I think he's a fine prospect. I like him more on day two than day one. I mean, short area, mid, like he can win at all three levels. He's got great feet. He can move, but just I was looking at who's on the board at 20. So you're passing on Powers Johnson, fine. You're passing on Graham Barton, so you're passing on both of them to move down. And then you take McConkey over a receiver who personally I'm probably higher on him than most. But I love A.D. Mitchell out of Texas. And then for them to take McConkey with A.D. Mitchell still sitting there is just I didn't really understand it. And it's not a move I would love. And I don't think they'll trade down, like you said. They haven't moved down since Casey Hampton, which was 01 out of Texas. So I don't see them moving down. And if they do, is it really gonna be for Ladd McConkey? I just he's a fine slot receiver. Steelers need a slot receiver. Good, he can produce immediately. I just think there's better options at receiver, and not even at receiver at 20. Take Graham Barton and get yourself the center for your future if you view him as a tackle. Get yourself a tackle who can play along Broderick Jones. I was not a fan of that mock draft at all. But I do think I don't hate McConkey as a prospect. I think he's a solid player. Just given the context of how it all went down, it's just not something I'd be a fan of.
Yeah, and I think I look back through his mock, and 8 tackles were off the board by the end of the first round. Both Jackson Powers Johnson and Graham Barton were off the board by the end of the first round. So pretty much his mock is, in my opinion, basically a worst case scenario for the team. I mean, if you're trading down, you have to have a plan. This is kind of the antithesis of a plan. They're not going to end up getting a tackle they like. They're not going to end up probably getting a center they like. They're going to have to panic and trade up in the second round and probably give away some of the draft capital that they just got from the trade down. So I don't know really what there is to gain there. And there's so many good receivers. I don't know if you really need to be selecting one in the first round, especially one that might be available at their pick at 51 potentially. So yeah, I wasn't a big fan of that either. Just kind of found it interesting. I did the math on the draft value chart, and I think they would fetch, obviously they'd swap first, so the 20th for the 27th, and then they would fetch, I believe, like a third and a fifth. It's just like, is that really worth putting yourself in a bind with the center and the tackle position? I don't think so. So
absolutely not.
There's some other ones here we wanted to talk about. Alex Kazora here on the site had his latest mock draft posted, version 3.0, kind of that post free agency mock draft. He had, I think in his last one, the center position was addressed in the second round with Zach Frazier, and I believe Amarius Mims in the first round. This time he switched things up and had Graham Barton there in the first round. We've talked a little bit about him throughout the show. I think if you're going for a center in the first round, regardless of if he is the best center, I think he is the best option in the first round if you're going to address the center position, just because he has that versatility to potentially play tackle. He's got, I mean, I think Dave ran his relative athletic score the other day, and he was literally top, you know, 9.99.
He was 10. Even.
Was he 10? Okay, yeah. So he's basically one of the top center, you know, athletes just from his measurables and his testing numbers available or really in the last several drafts. So I think that upside and just the ability to switch positions and you know, if it doesn't work out at center, it could work out at tackle. If it doesn't work out at tackle even, I mean, he didn't have experience playing guard, but I mean, he's the type of athlete. He has the good footwork. He's got a lot of good kind of fundamentals and technique in that I saw on his tape. I do think you're not going to, you know, end up with somebody who's unable to start at one of the five positions along the offensive line. The other two guys are more pure centers. And if they don't work out, you know, they're not really going to be able to move around as much. To me, Graham Barton is definitely kind of in my head moving up the board in terms of a possibility in the first round, just because if you don't take a center in the first round, it really looks like trouble. I don't know if you're going to be able to find one, and I don't know if they can afford for that to happen. In the second round, he had Ricky Pearsall from Florida. Do you have any thoughts there on Ricky?
I mean, I loved watching his tape from what I saw. That one-handed catch he made this season was crazy. The Steelers also brought him in for a pre-draft visit. He's somebody that I think could come in and start immediately opposite George Pickens, be a very productive receiver as a rookie. And I mean, I think that second round's really that spot at 51 is kind of the sweet spot for the Steelers to find a receiver. If it's not Pearsall, it can be Malachi Corley. It's not Malachi Corley, it can be Troy Franklin. There's a lot of receivers who in past years would be considered, you know, maybe late first, which, and these guys kind of are still considered, you know, fringe, maybe late first round picks, but just because of the depth of the receiver class, they're going to fall. Somebody's going to fall. So I definitely could see Pearsall being a guy that comes in, is immediately productive. That's a pick I would be very much on board with in the second round.
Yeah. And his tape, I mean, he's maybe not the best blocker, but he's very willing. And he does fit into the blocks well. He just doesn't stick to the blocks well. And with how run heavy the Steelers are going to be, I mean, the willingness as a blocker is half the battle for these wide receivers. We obviously saw that last year with some of the efforts that Deontay Johnson and George Pickens put out there. So a guy who's willing like that, he has experience in the slot. He can play, you know, kind of inside and outside. I think he'd be a great pick. Now, is he going to last to 51? I don't know. It seems like people are starting to kind of push him higher up boards, but you know, that kind of happens this time of year with a bunch of prospects, and ultimately people have to fall. So I think he'd be a good pick there in the second round. We'll just go over Alex's. He had Mason Smith there in the second pick in the third round. We already talked about Mason in the first pick of the third round there. He had Andrew Phillips, a guy who just came in for a pre-draft visit. either just came in or is about to. I don't know if we know the exact date on that, but
I think he might have been one of the guys that came in yesterday.
okay. So, yeah, Andrew Phillips from Kentucky. He's 5'1", 06, so he's 5'10" and 6/8", 190 pounds. I think he had a 42-inch vertical, so he's explosive. His 40 was okay. It wasn't great. I can't remember the exact number, something like 4.51 or 4.49, somewhere in that range, which is good. It's just not, it's not top end speed per se. But yeah, he's an intriguing guy. I think he played most of his snaps out there, out wide, but he did also play some in the slot. I think he projects to be more of a slot, honestly, with just how physical he is. The Steelers are in desperate need of a slot option. They don't have anyone on the roster that is the obvious choice right now. They've kind of been going by committee the last handful of years since Mike Hilton left, so they need somebody. I mean, the slot position's just grown in importance so much in the league. So Phillips is an interesting option there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think him and Mike Sanders are really your two guys you look at when you look at some potential slot corner options for the Steelers. Phillips, like you said, played outside in college, but he's gonna have to kick inside. And then what I like about Alex's mock too is he has them doubling up on corners. So he has Phillips there, and then he has De'Andre Prince in the seventh. And like I said earlier in the show, I really like the idea of doubling up on either, cornerback or wide receiver, one of those two positions that, especially receiver, they've had success drafting, and corner, I think they just need to add some bodies to the room to kind of compete. So I like the idea of Phillips, and then you add De'Andre Prince, you can be a little bit more of an outside option to work, behind Dante Jackson, behind Joey Porter Jr., and add some depth there. But I definitely think that slot corner is probably the if they go when they go corner early, I think it's going to be a Sanders or a Phillips because they need a slot corner. And otherwise, it's going to be they'll sign Shannon Sullivan again, like right after the draft. And I mean, he was okay for the Steelers last year. He came on a little bit, but it's definitely not the most exciting option. And I think they kind of need to find a more permanent solution there than, as you said, just going committee with as they've been doing the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, noticeably, or sorry, notably missing from his draft, at least in the early rounds, as somebody who could step in right away as an offensive tackle. He has Travis Glover, that Georgia State kid, in the sixth round with the first of the 2 sixth-round picks. Yeah, I mean, that would be obviously committing to Dan Moore Jr. for the final year of his rookie deal. That would also be committing to Broderick Jones, staying on the right side just because of what they've said about Dan Moore just being a better left tackle than he is a right tackle. So Glover's an interesting kind of name there. His tape, I think Alex did his scouting report, didn't come away overly impressed. When I talked to Glover at the Senior Bowl, he was a late addition there. He told me they ran the ball a whole lot at Georgia State, so he's very, very inexperienced as a pass protector. This isn't a guy who's going to step in and start, year one or probably even year two. This would be a developmental guy, possibly even kick inside to guard at some point. But he does have kind of intriguing size at 6'0", 6'4", 317 pounds. I think he's got some nice long arms. Kind of a piece of clay to work with, but it would leave the tackle position in an interesting spot this year. It would kind of be relying on maybe someone like Spencer Anderson to be the backup at that position for this season. I mean, what else do they have there right now?
Yeah, there's really not much. I mean, Spencer, he got some work there. He could be the swing guy, and I think Ray Fittipaldo threw him out as an option too, to potentially get some reps in training camp and be a if the Steelers go as a right tackle option. I think he's a real long shot, but yeah, he's if you go Glover, I think he's probably gonna sit a year, not play a ton, and Spencer Anderson's your swing option. I think that the Steelers are pretty high on Dan Moore, which is why this is a route they could go. But if you wait on tackle early, then Glover, I would if they do that, I hope he develops. But I feel like you're ending up with best case scenario another Dan Moore. He was a fourth round pick. They started him immediately, and he kind of is what he is. Like where we haven't gotten a lot of Dan Moore hasn't taken any huge steps forward. Like he's gone marginally better for sure, but he's not like he's not gonna like when he, he's not yeah he's not. Anything special at the left tackle position. So, if you don't go with tackle early, I think you're just kind of ending up with like, yeah, he'll be all right at that position. So, It's a route they might go with all the needs that they have, but it's not necessarily the most exciting route if you want them to improve tackle. And I do worry about leaving Broderick Jones at right tackle for another year, because then you move into left tackle. Then he hasn't played left tackle in 2 years. So that's another like dilemma, even though I know Omar Khan said eventually he'll move to the left side. And I think he's really a much better left tackle than he is right tackle. We saw some struggles at the end of last season, which hopefully, a full offseason work of the position, maybe he'll iron himself out. But I would be in favor of them taking, potential right tackle early in the draft instead of just kicking the position down the line.
Yeah, that is a very good point about leaving Broderick on the right side. I mean, if he ends up playing right tackle this year, he will have surpassed his total experience playing left tackle in college, where he had 19 starts. I think what he had, how many starts last year? Maybe
Third week 9, so 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 10.
10. Yeah, 10 starts. So, yeah, I mean, halfway through the year, you're talking about a guy who's now. He's more experienced on the right side than he is the left. So, yeah, very, very interesting thing to think about there. All right. Well, that is all that we have for our topics today. Thank you guys for tuning in for the first ever episode of the Depot Dive. I'm Ross McCorkle. That's Joe Clark. Another plug there for our hotline, 412-254-3145. Please do give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. We will play it live on air. And we will answer your question at the end of next show. Thank you guys so much. We hope you join us again.